powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hey, howdy. Stop distracting my co-hosts.
It was funny.
Oh,
what
so
was
good.
Funny?
Howdy was explaining to me, who an adult who does not play intramural sports, the concept of how people choose which league they're going to be into.
Or what level that they're
what
going
level
to do
they're
it
gonna
at.
Do it at. And it was really funny.
It all kind of stemmed from because our team, Flags R Us.
Not our, Jake's team.
Okay, my team. We're playing tonight. I play in a flag football league. I've done the last 3 years, and game two tonight. It's a big deal. 6:45, Juanita High School. Come out if you want to watch.
To watch Jake Hughes play football?
What? Who?
Yeah, I mean,
how
you
much
know,
are tickets, Jake?
There's the stands. I mean, I'm sure the tickets are. I mean, no less
start
than $50. I mean, not a big deal.
$50.
Yeah, I mean, you could get the courtside seats or the field pass. For
are you
probably
guys signing
about
anything after?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. Paul Moyer joins us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. I'm sure Paul's had plenty of experience with flag football. Paul,
probably not.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. You know what? Let's go back a couple of days here because we have a lot to get to. What was your reaction when the Seahawks, when the news came out that Josh Gordon was going to be a Seahawk?
Well, yeah, I was probably surprised on a few ends on that. The first, I just for him to last as long as he did. You know, whenever you have to clear waivers, you know, there are teams out there that will take a chance on pretty good athletes. And, you know, I get today with social media and, you know, Antonio Brown, there's just been a lot of news of you know, those who have some negative, you know, information out there. But I was surprised. I was surprised he went that long. It didn't surprise me the Seahawks picked him up. You know, I think they really do believe, and you've heard Pete talk about it forever. He's willing to give people a second chance. He thinks he can, you know, talk to these kids. They have a great support system here for those who want to take advantage of it. And I think he's done a good job framing and managing expectations out to us in that, hey, nothing's given here. There's no promises. You know, he's going to have to go earn it. So I'm excited. I mean, I hope it works out well. You always want it to work out well for people.
Paul, it's interesting to also see the other acquisition that they got with Quandre Diggs. And what is the likelihood or the fit that you see him having, barring that he goes through an entire week that is healthy and that he is able to contribute on Monday night?
We could use him.
Yeah, we certainly could.
We can use him. He's a good football player, and I think we have a lot of good football players right now. There's a lot of youth, and there's a lot of mistakes still going on. You know, Marquise Blair is a guy who I think is going to be a very good football player for us for a long time. You can see that in the way he shows up in the run game and the pass game. But every once in a while, I go, oh, you know, what's he doing there? And you know, the one thing with Pete is, you know, they want consistency and they want guys who are smart players on top of just great athletes. So I think Diggs, in any manner, you know, maybe it's solidifying that a little more consistency in the safety position. He can play nickel, and as you know, they're not necessarily looking for shutdown nickel players right now as much base defense as we've played. But we've got to get somebody in that nickel spot that they feel comfortable, you know, on first and second down as well. You know, if teams are going to, you know, go out there with three wide receivers, we've got to match up. We got to play some man. We got to be able to also be stout against the run. And I think Diggs can do that. He can help us in a lot of different ways.
Hey, Paul, I'm going to stick on the defensive side of the ball. We've been talking earlier in the show about what we think the problem is. Is it personnel? Is it coaching? Is it scheme? Jake had his six fixes earlier in the show. If you have to look at the defense, which is obviously struggling, where do you think the problems are?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time texting other colleagues out there, and I think it's more scheme in the type of players we have right now. We play a lot of soft, you know, bail technique with our corners, and we play outside what I call skinny or outside technique. So when we're bailing, we're opening up to the inside, which is allowing for seam routes and slant routes. And we're not given a lot of underneath help. And if we're not going to do that, we're just, you're making it very easy for quarterbacks. If you go and look at San Francisco, and it can work if you've got a fantastic pass rush with four guys. And if you want to go and see how that's done, go watch San Francisco right now. They play a shell to an extent. They play some, at times, what it looks like maybe quarters or cover two, some three deep zone. But, you know, they're very tight, and they're going to contest the short throw because they know that ball has to come out. Well, the ball is not coming out fast for us. So now for us to play that scheme, which we've done for the last 7 or 8 years, man, it's just not working. Now, that doesn't mean we can't still win football games with it. It's going to be frustrating because people are going to move the ball on us between the 20s. And if we don't do a good job or get them to third down more often and win, it's going to be frustrating. And we saw that against Tampa Bay. We didn't get to third down enough. They actually converted in the first half. I think they were 5 for 7. And so we're going to be giving up some points on top of that. That doesn't mean we can't win. We're 7-2 right now with that scheme. But I don't think we make any adjustments until the bye week, where they can really, you know, self-analyze and say, is this the best defense for us right now? And I don't know. We don't play a lot of cover two. I don't know if I've ever seen two man. You know, just to help the corners a little bit. We used to drop a backside safety away from, you know, a three wide receiver set to help with slant routes on the weak side and crossing routes. I don't see a lot of that happening either. So there's something in the scheme that I think that they've got to shore up, but I think it's going to be a few weeks before they actually get to it.
I was just going to say, is there a reason you'd have to wait that long? Because you've got a pivotal game coming up here, and then you hit your bye, but... I mean, you risk also going in with your same problems to face San Francisco. Would you make changes beforehand, or do you think it's smarter to wait until the bye?
Well, I think it's subtle, Stacey, in that, yes, I'm going to start incorporating some things. The one strength we've had, up until really last week, we've been pretty good in the red zone, and we were one of the better teams on third down conversion defensively. I think we were 6 going into last week, and we dropped to 8 this week. But it's one of those we say, again, we'll play soft. You know, we're not going to give up anything deep and create easy scores, and we're going to hold the line hopefully when we get to the red zone and on third down. So the one thing, you know, being a former coach, man, you got so much going on, game planning, to all of a sudden say, we're going to make this big schematic change. It's just hard to do during the middle of the week. You can make some subtle changes for the game plan, but we're still going to go on what we think we do best. And then when you get to the bye week, you have a chance to really self-evaluate and maybe start, you know, making some adjustments to that. They're going to put a game plan together. They're going to do the best they can against San Francisco. It's not going to be a huge overhaul going into this week.
On the positive side of things, Paul, the offense is just clicking right now. We're going to be adding Josh Gordon to that. Besides that change, is there anything that you would like to see changed on the offense, or do you think, hey, just keep doing more of what you're doing right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, keep doing what you're doing. You know, let's give it to Russell. And the thing I loved what we did last week is they knew it was going to be hard to run the football, at least early on. And we came out throwing the football. You know, you don't have to force the run. You have to be efficient with it. And, you know, we certainly would loosen them up a little bit in the running game and actually had a pretty good day running the football. This next week is going to be a bigger challenge, and the bigger challenge is just that the quick game is going to be hard for us. They are going to sit on our short routes, and it's, do we have enough time to buy time for Russell, you know, either with play action or pump fakes and be able to get the ball downfield. Arizona had some success with it. I think we can run the football on them. It's the one weakness watching them. I guess it was Thursday night when it was. They play a little high on the defensive line. I think they're 22nd at rushing average, and not just rushing a game. Rushing average is more important to me, in that you can have some success with that. So, you know, we're scoring points. We're doing everything. I'm really curious to see the game plan against San Francisco, because this team is legitimately good.
Yeah, Paul, there's no doubt. I mean, you watch them. Obviously, they pass the eye test, but then when you really study and dive deep into that team, they are extremely talented with their front four in the passing game. And so, so do you anticipate, just like it gave me a lot of confidence, I don't know how it made you feel, but this Tampa Bay game for this offense in particular gave me confidence knowing that this offense and this offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, is willing to be adaptable, at least show going into a different game that, hey, we're going to go with the ebbs and flows and use our strengths to attack their weaknesses. Now, heading into this game, that kind of fits our philosophy of running the ball first and then play action pass to try and give Russell that protection. Is that what I'm gathering from you in terms of what you think that plan of attack is going to more look like this Monday night?
Yeah, I what you were just saying there, what I do like about, you know, Shoddy and Pete and his staff is they're just finding ways to win. You know, you go on with the game plan. We may have to adjust that pretty quick, you know, unlike, you know, last year at the beginning of the season where, you know, we went to a game plan, just stay with the game plan. And here, I mean, they've got so many, you know, weapons at their disposal that, you know, they can make adjustments during the game. I think we have to make this week a physical game. It has to be physical, particularly offensively. We've just got to try to pound the football on them. And I mean, try and wear them out. The challenge is San Francisco is pretty physical. They are having fun. They're flying around that front four. I mean, they are special. They're not the strongest, biggest guys. They're great pass rushers. I think we can run the football and hopefully reduce some of the, you know, possessions. And I think we can shut their offense down too. You know, I think we're going to have a great game plan. They've got some pretty numbers. You go look at stats. They're seventh in the league right now. They're second in rushing yards a game. But, and it's, by the way, they have a very complex running game too. So that's got to be number one. But I think we can slow them down and make this a four-quarter game. But this is by far the best team I think we've played all year. And we've played New Orleans and we've played the Ravens. So we're going to find out really where we are as a team after Monday night.
Paul, let me ask you this one question. When it comes to offensively, what do you fear most about the 49ers? Is it their complex run game that you just talked about? Or is it Jimmy Garoppolo and the way that he started to play this last Thursday night against the Arizona Cardinals in your mind?
It's their running game. That doesn't mean they don't have an accomplished or capable passing game. And Garoppolo, you go watch him, and there's a lot of good things he does. He's accurate. He makes, you know, pretty quick decisions. But there's about 10-15% of his decision making that you scratch your head and you better take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
He will throw into some coverage. He makes some interesting decisions at times, but it's the running game. Whatever it is, we've got to take something away. They run it's a tough running game, and where they create some space inside, you know, and, you know, I've watched us, even our linebackers at times, I don't want to say they're undisciplined, but maybe get fooled with their eyes. Now, we can't get fooled here. They got speed at the running back position. So we're going to have to commit to stopping the running game and let Garoppolo attempt to beat us. I haven't really seen it yet. He's capable, certainly, in the fourth quarter of making some plays. But if I'm going to try and take my chances winning, it's going to be all on the pretty boy. And he is pretty.
He is definitely pretty, no doubt about that.
Yes.
Also pretty, Paul Moyer on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Paul, I saw you retweeting Troy Aikman last night. He said, our league has a lot to address this offseason as consumer confidence continues to wane. And I assume he was referring to the PI reviews and some of the flag throwing by the officials last night and certainly in the games before that. And you had a response to that. Would you like to clarify?
Well, what I was saying, I don't think it's confidence waning. I mean, the popularity of the game is at an all-time high. His data didn't support that. I got what he was saying. I think it's the frustration of the game right now, that people are frustrated. You know, there's too many flags. It's slowing it down. We don't know what PI is. You know, protecting, you know, the helmet to helmets, all of that stuff, even though I feel like they've cleaned that up a little bit this year. And part of it is the players, you know, it's taken them a few years. They're adapting to it. But they got to make these rules simpler. They just, you know, they got to take the refs out of it because it's incredibly frustrating. But remember, most people are watching Red Zone. Most people are watching fantasy football. And so I kind of disagreed with the confidence, you know, being waned by people out there. But they do got to clean it up because people are just getting too frustrated.
Paul Moyer on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Thanks for jumping on with us, Paul. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man. Hey, good luck in your flag football game. $50, though, really? You guys will promote anything.
that's bleacher seats.
It's capitalism. Try to take advantage of it, Paul. You would never subject yourself to that kind of stuff, right? You're too smart.
Absolutely, I would be there. I would, but I don't have $50. Can I get a pass?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you a pass. Right, if Paul Moyer's coming down, heck yeah.
Boom. For sure, I'm there.
All right, let's do it.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. All right, guys. Have a good one. Thanks.
$50. Unbelievable.
I mean, you never know. I mean, do you think somebody would take advantage?
Well, I'm trying to think of other things I would pay $50 to do.
I mean, that's not much.
Yeah, really? I mean, what did I pay to go to the art museum the other day? Maybe $25, $30?
There are things that are sneaky expensive, like the zoo and aquarium. I always forget until I go there, and two people is like $60.
Yeah, if you're going to go do anything, like any kind of 2-3 hour experience, we'll just say 2 hour, it's going to be at least $20.
Well, hang on. Jake's flag football thing is a 2 or 3 hour experience.
It is, but I mean, we're talking about flag football.
I mean, if you want
to... talking about some really good football players.
Yeah. Who else is in the league? Anybody I know?
Oh, man. No.
Warwick Dunn?
No. Yeah. I actually, on our team, another name that you would know is Brian Walters.
Brian Walters. Yeah, the old kick
professional
return,
fair catch guy. Yeah. He's the best.
We have B-Wall and Juanita High School's finest. Yeah, we've got B-Wall on our team.
Do you have room for two more?
Stacey, no.
No, I mean,
for you and Tom?
Yeah.
No. I don't want to play.
No, it's okay.
Maybe not on the roster, but like on the staff even, Jake?
I got like a 6'2" 40.
6'2" 40?
Yeah.
That's not going to cut it.
Yeah, that might work.
I think I got a 30 inch vertical or.
Yeah, right. We'll throw it in.
Can we test that during the break?
Yeah, we have a lot of fun out there.
I can clear at least, I can jump at least a foot in the air.
Oh, yeah, maybe like one computer monitor. Yeah.
Okay.
You can do more than that.
I'll get back to you with my stats.
I think if I'm not mistaken, Paul Gallant is in the league.
He's in a flag.
If Paul can do it, I can do it.
But I think he's in a different division. I think he's in the co-ed league. And I don't even know what our league's called. I'm sure it is co-ed, but it's like this other, more competitive.
Serious kind.
I'm doing air quotes, perceived competitive.
Yeah,
where people want to act like they're in Super Bowl mode, or I don't know.
I thought yours was comprised of ex-players.
You say that like you aren't probably also doing that.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Does Brian Walters have a Super Bowl ring? Wasn't he on that 2014 team?
Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl ring. Absolutely does.
What a gig. What a racket that is, huh?
Yeah, and he actually had etched himself a nice little career. He was a good player down in Jacksonville, too. So,
what's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
Dude, tonight is a night. I mean, normally we have things like Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, South Alabama against Troy.
Please,
tonight we
don't
got
going down for real.
We got a night of college basketball tonight.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da. We have number one Michigan State taking on the number two seed Kentucky. And the number three seed Kansas taking on the number four seed
Rock Duke. Rock chalk. Let's go.
Those games will originate from Hartford, Connecticut at the Civic Center. Number one plays number two, and number three plays number four this early in the year. That is something
I like that,
like Curtis said to me yesterday, no other sport can really boast that. Because in college football, obviously, there's not enough games where you can sort of, quote-unquote, waste on that type of thing. College basketball, what do you play, about 30 games before the tournament starts? So you can have that type of game. But that's a cool thing in the beginning of November to have the number one and number two team preseason rankings going at one another. And plus, I mean, those four teams are blue blood as they come. Michigan State, Kentucky, Kansas, Duke. I mean, that is those are two tremendous matchups. I will definitely be watching those tonight. Are either one of you two big college basketball fans?
Yeah, I love college basketball. Love the Kansas Jayhawks. One of my best experiences when I was going to college is going to Allen Fieldhouse. That's an incredible, incredible environment.
That's one of those rare schools, kind of like where I went in Indiana, where I won't say basketball pays the bills, but basketball is definitely
a basketball school.
It's emphasized.
It is. And also, but like from a venue standpoint, it's to me, it's CenturyLink Field number one and Allen Fieldhouse a close number two in terms of the environment, the attitude, how special it is. I mean, when they renovated that whole arena, that field house, they kept intact the actual field house, and then the renovations kept outside of it. They didn't want to touch anything inside the arena.
By law, they may not have been allowed to. Think about what we're going through over here with that, with the roof over at Key Arena.
Save the roof!
Exactly. I mean, they had to save that thing.
Protect the roof!
At Allen Fieldhouse, I would imagine there's even that much more of an uproar to renovate that place.
That's where
right?
basketball was invented, right?
That's right.
Of course,
you got
Dr. James Naismith.
Just nailing peach baskets to the wall.
Yeah, you had to go up there with a ladder and,
retrieve the ball. Yeah, no one thought about cutting the bottom out of the basket, which should have seemed obvious.
It's a weird thing. Are they playing these games at their home venues?
It's
or
a neutral site. I believe it's at the United Center in Chicago.
Oh, both games are there?
Yeah.
It's quite a back-to-back.
And then at halftime, they're unveiling the college football playoff seeding.
Sheesh!
Whoa!
You're going to say there's wiener dog races, but wow, you even topped that.
Wait a minute, the college football,
the first
ranking?
Yeah.
Gotcha, that's a good idea. ESPN's going to be in charge of that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you sure that job is safe in their hands?
Yeah, well, they've had it for a few years now. I think they've done a stand-up job.
I thought that was Condoleezza Rice's job. Hey, Stacey, we got some football tonight, too.
I know, but SMU isn't playing until Saturday.
So you're only concerned with SMU?
That's your
SMU is my new favorite team.
You got Ball State. Curtis, if you know the mascots, tell me. Ball State is the...
I believe they're the Cardinals.
First Western Michigan.
That's the Hilltoppers, right?
Western Michigan, no. Western Michigan's the Broncos. You're thinking Western Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Got the big Kool-Aid man-looking mascot.
I'll obviously be watching this in addition to college basketball.
Ball State versus Western Michigan. That'll be on ESPN2. What do you guys want to do next? You want to come back to some optimism about two guys who are going to be
the cavalry
joining this team
coming
this weekend? The cavalry is here.
That's right.
For the Seahawks, different looking team. All right, that's next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Well, the cavalry is definitely here. Pete Carroll yesterday indicating that Quandre Diggs and Josh Gordon are both going to be practicing and ready to go for Monday night's game against the San Francisco 49ers. Now, don't get me wrong. It's a good thing that they're here. But this game is like a midterm. You feel like it counts for about 30% of your grade. It is that important of a game. And it feels just a little bit like Josh Gordon and Quandre Diggs playing in a game with the Seahawks for the first time is like cramming for a test. Like, how much can they learn in between now and Monday? How much of an impact can they have on the game? Can they just rely on their own smarts and physical capabilities to go out there and just be great? Or would it have done some good to actually, play a couple of games before this?
I think the fact that Diggs is a pretty experienced veteran helps. It'd be one thing if he was a rookie coming off. Like, if they were like, yeah, we have to put Phil Haynes in there, who looked really promising and who people were really excited about, but he's a rookie coming in from no experience and jumping into a pretty important game. I think that'd be fair to be like, well, now he's got to cram all this stuff into a week. Diggs was a defensive captain who played games this year and just missed recent time with a hamstring injury. So I worry less about him.
I worry less, but is playing safety for one team just like playing safety for everybody else? Like, go out there and just be a center fielder?
I'm going to guess it's no.
Yeah.
Not having been a professional safety.
Yeah, it's definitely a no in terms of is it the same everywhere? No, schemes are different and responsibilities are different. But for the Seahawks, they are, you know, and we've kind of talked about this today. Unfortunately, they're a little vanilla. And but for Quandre Diggs, the nice thing about that is there's not a whole lot of added responsibility. There's not a lot of extra stuff that he truly has to learn and know. You know, cover three is cover three, and he has seen that from his time in college to his time as a pro, and understands the responsibilities that are there. And that's also one of the reasons why I think for him coming into this game and playing three safeties and allowing Quandre Diggs to at times play nickel, at times play safety, would be in their best interest and play more match coverage in their zone coverage, meaning that basically the linebackers are playing zone, that their eyes are to the quarterback and they are sifting through and trying to match routes as they come to them, you know, crosser, you know, shallow crosses and things in front of them, whereas the corners and the safety and the nickel corner are playing more man-to-man principles. I think that eliminates some of the extra thoughts. It also allows those players to tighten down the windows and not give, you know, wide open windows that we have seen over the last 2 weeks for the Atlanta Falcons and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I mean, with these two guys, I look at with Josh Gordon specifically, and I say, all right, is Russell going to treat him like he's, I mean, where does he line up? You've got Metcalf, Lockett, and Gordon. Whose position is he lining up in place of?
Yeah, it's a good question. The person that he's taking away from in terms of minutes and snaps, it's Jerron Brown and it's David Moore. That would be the two players that would see a decreased role in reps. Jerron Brown, they love his ability to block. They've always appreciated his willingness to do the dirty work, so to speak, in that scheme. But when you see David Moore get those one-on-one go ball opportunities, that's really what Josh Gordon's role is going to be, is to be that third receiver and being asked to take advantage of those one-on-one chances in the slot, on the outside, trying to create mismatches. And the thing that I love about that now is I believe that his presence frees up Tyler Lockett. It freezes up DK Metcalf and allows them to truly, for Russell Wilson to truly look at, okay, I've got one-on-one matchups. Who is the lesser, who is the weakest link? Like we saw Russell go after the cornerback for the Bucs, Dean. It didn't matter who was lined up against him. Mm-hmm. He was going to attack that guy. And for them, now you got three receivers that can be pretty dynamic.
It didn't seem to matter with anybody. It didn't matter who was covering Lockett either. It felt like if Russell put it in the right place, he was going to be able to either beat the guy, the defender, or he was going to be able to just go up and get the ball and make the catch regardless. So when you say Josh Gordon's going to be drawing away coverage, it makes me feel better. But I also feel like, you know what, Lockett's probably making those catches anyway. So what's really the effect?
Well, he might not be.
I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying, though, too, to add on that, because I think it's also, you're saying it tongue in cheek, but I think it's a good point, though, is that Josh Gordon, if he's out on the field, he's going to get plenty of one-on-one chances. Because are you worried about Josh Gordon if you're the 49ers, a guy that hasn't been able to stay on a roster, is coming off of IR? Or are you worried about Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf? You're worried about those two guys that are playing really good football. So Josh Gordon, if healthy and gets on the field, is going to have his opportunity to show what he can do, and they're going to try and attack that. There's no question about it. So that's kind of why it's interesting, and it will be one of those things, like you said, Tom, and how you phrased it, cramming before a test. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of nervousness about prepping for that moment, and can Quandre Diggs and can Josh Gordon be nice pieces to help them out? We'll see once it's time to take that test.
You know, we may talk up a little bit more about this tomorrow, but it just occurred to me, when we say that this is going to be one of the biggest games of the year and it's like a midterm, I'm only saying that as a fan. We know that over at the VMAC, Pete preaches that every single game, every week is a championship opportunity and they're all the same. I wonder, though, in the back of everybody's head over there, they know what's going on in the NFL. They know that the 49ers are a division rival. They know that Sherman's over there. They know this team is very good. Well, isn't a bigger game to them than your average game?
I think
please
it
tell
has
me
to
yes.
Be. Yeah, I think it has to be, because I think at that point you start looking at the math. And it'd be one thing if they were undefeated and you met them for the first time in week 4 or 5 like they did with the Cardinals. But right now they have 8 wins, right? They're 8-0. And you risk, if you lose to them, it's done. Like, they could...
For the division, not the season, but the division.
Yeah. For the division. But, I mean, that's your shot. You get home field advantage. You want to win the division.
Yeah. It is a significant, in terms of percentages of being able to get to the Super Bowl when you have home field advantage, is significant rather than being the wild card. So this is a huge pivotal game for them. And although they don't change their prep, their style, or their speech, you can definitely count on the sense that there is a definite urgency, maybe not with the messaging from coach to player, but I think within that coaching staff itself, especially on defense, to try and get this thing right.
We sum it up next. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
That wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
What's the expression I'm looking for? Is it falling on deaf ears when you say something and then nobody hears it or cares?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the expression.
I feel like I'm doing that, and so are a good percentage of sports talk radio hosts across the country today, because we and coaches and players, as a matter of fact, we were misled as to what this challenge system for the pass interference was actually going to mean. We thought what it meant was, okay, anytime there's a PI, or you think there should have been a PI flag thrown, you can throw a red challenge flag, and you can have that play reviewed. And when the official goes under the hood, they can look at it and say, oh, yeah, well, it looks like we missed that there. That's not what's happened at all.
Mm-mm.
It's only been for the egregious ones where it looks like, okay, we just completely missed this call. Plain and simple. And I'm not even sure if we've seen... How many of those have we seen overturned? One?
But then that's the thing, is the concept of egregiousness
is still subjective. It's still subjective. It's still relative. Now, I'm going back to the Seahawks game against Pittsburgh, when they were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the Tyler Lockett one.
Right. That was a no-call that Pete challenged,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
They then, I guess, affixed a flag onto mm-hmm. that call. The next play... They hit Metcalf in the back of the end zone. They end up winning that game. That one ended up being a huge swing. Think about all the other calls.
Yeah, that was 37 yards.
Right, that either should or shouldn't have been made. I mean, even the one last night.
It's true.
The one that went against the Giants, and then a no-call that went against the Giants just moments after that. That can swing games. I don't understand how Roger Goodell can look at what he's got going on in the field and say, oh, that's a win. I'm glad we changed that.
Well, I think they just weren't expecting coaches to challenge as much as they did, which is why I have my own personal conspiracy theory, where I think that they are less willing to call a PI even if they know it's there. That if the same play were in front of them and they were just incidentally to make the opposite call, they'd be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when you flag it, instead of calling what could be a PI, they're saying it's not good enough. And I think it's just to discourage coaches from challenging it because they thought it would be much more rare. And the whole point that right. they always want to stress is not having as many reviews. Like, don't want to slow it down.
Basically, you have to tackle the guy for them to overturn the mm-hmm. call is what it comes down to. Egregious is that's what it's going to have to be, is clearly you knock the player over, tackle him, and for it to be a challenge that can be overturned.
Right. If it's your garden variety pass interference where the guy just has his hand in front of you and they're not going to overturn that, even though when they go under the hood and they look at it,
right.
They have to be saying to themselves, oh
yeah.
If I saw that in real time, it's definitely a flag.
But see, to me, this is exactly what it is. It's the league had almost no choice but to create the one-year rule because people were so angry about the NFC Championship game and there was no way to fix it. It was a blatant human error that you can't go back and fix. The Saints could have been in a Super Bowl and weren't. You altered the that year's story for one franchise.
Yeah, they did it to placate.
Exactly.
But now, where are you?
But well, now it's probably a rule they didn't really want to make because they don't want added stoppages to a game. And then the coaches were taking advantage of it smartly because you have the potential, like Pete Carroll did in week two, to gain almost 40 yards.
And now we're sitting here saying, what's the point of the rule? And so now you know, after the season, they're going to say, you know what, Tom? You're right. We're just going to take that back.
So
and people are going to go,
exactly.
Good, I'm glad it's not there. So actually, the NFL is pretty brilliant if you think about it in terms of how it's going to go away.
If you're Pete Carroll, you're throwing
the
flag. It's
going to go away.
It is, but everybody sees right through that quote-unquote brilliance. We all know that the whole thing it's a big charade.
I agree, but I don't think we're going to be talking about it the same next season as we are right now. My point.
Did you like the demonstration I did on your body just then?
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I know you guys couldn't see that, but when Tom was demonstrating pass interference, it was actually for me, Curtis, and Kyle to see.
And anybody who was on the web stream here.
Yeah, if you were watching on the stream.
See, if I were a defender, I'd go like this to try to... you know, deflect the ball.
Yeah, that's good. That's good technique,
Tom. All right,
Tom.
What do you guys got?
First I was looking at the Achilles heel. I didn't get a chance to ask this of Paul Moyer when he was on earlier today because I feel like he kind of answered it before I asked. But if the pass rush is the Achilles heel for Seattle, I wanted to know what the Achilles heel was for San Francisco. I feel like I've been led to believe it's the passing offense, that really it's their run game and their defense that's powering this team. But then Jake mentioned something interesting about their defense, which has seemed otherworldly. And you said that it's about stopping the run because of the size of the defensive line.
Yeah,
right?
So their defensive line hasn't been great. I mean, they are behind the Seahawks, to give you a benchmark in terms of where they're at in terms of their rush defense. And Paul threw out another stat in terms of their rush average that they're giving up, rushing yards per average, which is in the low 20s. So that's obviously not a strong point for the 49ers defense. So that's something that obviously fits into the philosophy of the Seattle Seahawks, and that's something that they can take advantage of. So I think those are two points that you can definitely look at. And for me, I come back to this concept of Josh Gordon, Quandre Diggs, two really good football players. One, I think, is a little bit more proven, a little bit more that you can count on in Quandre Diggs and the value and the change that he can bring to this defense. Immediately, Josh Gordon is more, to me, the cherry on top of a really, really nice-looking sundae. If he pans out, it's not necessary to put the cherry on top, but it's just a little extra something.
No, you have to put the cherry on top.
And if it can work out for you, then it's great. And it's the nice final complete piece to make this offense a truly explosive, Super Bowl-worthy type of offense.
I understand your analogy there, and that makes perfect sense. But when have you ever been served a sundae without a cherry?
If you go to McDonald's. McDonald's, yeah.
In awful places. I thought it was actually really interesting. I didn't even really think of it, and it seems so simple, but I didn't really think of it until the last segment when we were talking about who can be an impactful player in their first time out. When Jake mentioned that San Francisco isn't going to freak out because Gordon is on the field, I was like, yeah, of course they won't. Like, it makes sense because you have a much better shot of Russell Wilson completing a pass to Lockett and DK, who has chemistry with, who he has experience with. So it's not like they're going to be, you know, spending a lot of time with Gordon. So Gordon actually has maybe a better chance than you would think he would.
Because they're not going to take him seriously enough?
Maybe.
Who takes the cherry on top seriously?
I think that's a big part of it,
You
Tom.
Take the cherry and you cast it aside if you're me.
Really?
It's
You
decorative.
Don't even eat the cherry?
No. The cherry is parsley.
But you better make...
You don't
darn
like
sure.
nice things.
You better make darn sure that the cherry is there, though,
Wait,
for
so
me
you're,
to throw away.
You're going to freak
it's
out. You're going to look at the person.
It's a matter of principle, Jake. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
All right, you're
that
wasting
That is so
cherries.
Disappointing, Tom. You eat the cherry every time.
No, I'll give it to you or whoever I'm with.
That's disappointing.
What?
Yeah, you've really
nice
let us down.
Nice benefit to Tom's friendship.
All right.
I guess so.
Three cherries.
Hey, you want my cherry?
I guess so. I'll take it, Tom.
All right. We're back tomorrow. We don't have Pete's presser, I don't think, because we're going to do that on the huddle on Thursday. So we'll do something else. I'm not really sure what the heck we're going to do.
Tomorrow is a Tuesday.
Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.